Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The auto industry certainly seems to be roaring back to life, but there does not seem to be a lot of buzz surrounding alternative energy vehicles. And that's being reflected in sales. January figures were anemic at best for electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids. The Obama administration had predicted 1 million electric cars would be scooting around on our highways by 2015. Today, there are barely 30,000. Just why aren't these vehicles catching on with the public? Is there anything the automakers can do to make EVs and plug-ins more appealing? Joining us is Dr. Sean McAlinden, who's the Executive VP of Research, and he's the Chief Economist at the Center for Auto Research. And David Shepherdson is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Detroit News. David, start by giving us a recap of those January sales figures for electric vehicles and the plug-in hybrids.
Well, it was pretty grim. Sales were off across the board about 50% or more for the major plug-ins and EVs, the Nissan Leaf, Chevy Volt, and Toyota Prius plug-in. And it looks a little worse than it really is, in part because many buyers pulled ahead their purchases in December because of the $7,500 tax credit. But it still does not mask the entire problem, which is that Americans still think they're generally too expensive. They're too unsure about the range, especially with pure EVs. And gas prices have, although at a record high in 2012, we're not seeing the kind of spikes we saw back in 2008, which really scared people and shifted them away from SUVs and trucks back then. And now it's a little, the reality is people are not shifting dramatically and certainly not making the big jump to EVs because of gas prices. And at least in the short term, it doesn't look like sales will get dramatically better.
I know Nissan CEO Carlos Ghosn called the Leaf sales a disappointment for us. Sean, would you say that feeling's being echoed in executive offices at the other automakers?
Absolutely. I'm afraid that most of the major automakers that we work with speak to don't really believe the pure electric cars will ever probably reach 1% of the market. They got a little more than a third of 1% last year by 2025. You know, hybrids are a different story. With electrics, they kind of captured, they helped capture 3.1% of the market last year. But frankly, on hybrids, that really does depend on the price of gasoline, mm-hmm. Which even if it was a record last year, wasn't enough to, spur a lot of hybrids. There are some new mild hybrids that are doing well that aren't as expensive as the traditional ones, but overall, I think on the pure electrics, I'm afraid we're looking at another early mortality for the electric car.
Interesting. So. What is not happening to make the American public embrace the electric car?
Well, one, obviously, is cost. Mm-hmm. Two, the infrastructure isn't there to support electric cars. And third, and most important, is customer acceptance, the big worry on fuel economy technologies. The range is limited, unreliable, depending on the weather or how hard you use the car. The recharge time is incredibly inconvenient. The transportation, motor vehicles are a path-dependent product. People are used to the way they drive, how they use their vehicle, what it can do, what it feels like. And electric cars violate all of these rules. And it's just not going to change enough in the next 15 years to really save that product. I can see why the administration put $7.5 billion behind it.
And that's what I wanted to get into
with
both of you. When you think of the federal subsidization that went in for the battery suppliers and the producers of EVs, and has the federal government stumbled, in your opinion, by plowing so much money into alternative fuel vehicles, Sean?
I can see why the Japanese bet on hybrids, the Europeans bet on diesels, our government up until this administration bet on nothing. And right now, actually, we see each automaker pursuing a very different path to get to that higher fuel economy target, which means that some will fail, some will succeed, and the scale economy, as we call it, may not happen. And some companies want to downsize their motors and turbocharge them. Some want to stick with hybrids. some want to upnumber their transmissions and lightweight the vehicle. They all have different, very different plans. And here was an administration that said, we're not got to worry about 2025. We always got to worry about 2040 and 2050 in our goals. And we got to get to electrics eventually. Let's get it going before other countries do. And it just didn't work. This was a case where they should have set goals for the industry but not picked the technology and said, you guys pick the best way to get there, but get there. See? And that's what most executives and industry analysts are basically saying today.
So, David, this was a case of Washington kind of telling them how high to jump and playing the tune, but perhaps it was all the wrong tune?
Well, certainly there's no question that the U.S. government is committing an enormous sum of money to EVs. I mean, if you include the tax credits, the $7,500 tax credit that the government estimates over the next 10 years, it will cost it $7.5 billion. And you add to that the $5 billion or so in direct loans and grants to EVs and battery companies since 2009, we're talking about well in excess of $10 billion the government is committing to EVs. The main driver and why I'm not quite as pessimistic as Sean is I don't think they're going to disappear, at least in the near term, is because of California. California joined by 10 other states using its authority grandfathered in under the Clean Air Act, has the right to require or set its own emissions rules, which was upheld by the Supreme Court. And as a result, they have imposed a zero emission mandates, which start out very small, a few thousand vehicles, and will grow exponentially in the next few years. In fact, by 2040, California estimates that almost 90% of the vehicles will be zero emission, either full electric or hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. Now, they've changed that mandate multiple times and they've watered it down, so it certainly could change. But because of this mandate, you're seeing companies bring EVs to market that they don't want to sell. Like Chrysler is bringing a Fiat 500 EV. There's a lot of small EVs. The Ford Focus EV, which has only sold 700 cars in 14 months, is another example of selling these vehicles to meet this mandate. So as a result, these EVs are going to be out there in small numbers, and so the industry is sort of primed that if there was a big spike in gas prices or some other driver, tipping point, that they'd be ready to sell these in big numbers. But Sean's also right that the infrastructure is just not there. Yes, they're adding, one, two, three, four, charging EV chargers here or there, which are fine for small numbers. But what happens if we suddenly have hundreds of EVs in certain cities the infrastructure is not prepared for dramatic numbers. For the one-off EVs, it's fine, but there's still a lot of problems. So short term, they're going to be around, I think. They're not going to die because of California, but the jury's out as to whether they have a long-term future.
Well, we have $9 a gallon gasoline in Europe, and we already have more recharging stations in the UK and France than we have electric vehicles, and they still won't sell. The product, David, is a bad product, and we've killed it off twice before. We didn't do it. The consumer did it. And even the Californians at ARB are reconsidering in a large way, I think, fuel cell vehicles is not 15, 20 years away, but less than 10, as the price is going to be below 50 in about a year's time. And there's a vehicle you can refill it up in 3 minutes and get 400-mile range.
For those of us who aren't familiar, tell us about the fuel cell.
Well, fuel cell is a hydrogen vehicle
that
runs on compressed hydrogen that can be made from many different sources. And it actually is converted to electricity and runs the same electric motors that would be in an electric car. And frankly, in realistic, the only barrier to fuel cell now is still obviously to reduce the cost of the technology on board to get it closer to electric vehicles. And second, there's enormous opposition from the energy industry, who, by the way, never saw electric cars as a threat to gasoline.
Which tells you something, doesn't
Absolutely
it?
Absolutely does. I mean, they see hydrogen as the threat. And they're refusing to install it and resisting the installation of hydrogen dispenser stations in California as we speak. and with every lawyer they've got. So
interesting.
A lot of technology should be tried. And, you know, eventually some will work, some won't. But the electric car, I think, has had its shot. And we've got to move on to some better solutions.
But just the problem with, of course, the hydrogen vehicles is that they have not met expectations either. I mean, GM, going back, for example, 20-odd years ago, has said, you know, made, you know, big promises on how many fuel cell vehicles would be sold when they could bring the cost down. And now you have Honda and the German companies all vowing to bring fuel cells to market by 2015. I'm skeptical, given the history of advanced technologies, that those are doable. But you did see a pretty interesting announcement last week of three major auto companies, Nissan, Daimler, and Ford, saying they're going to work together on a hydrogen fuel cell project. So, you know, long term, that technology has a lot of advantages. I agree with Sean. It doesn't have the range problem. You know, the quick refueling. It's a lot more like gasoline, what Americans are used to. If the costs can come down, frankly, you may see something like China, which has a much more government-controlled economy, simply mandate big numbers of fuel cells, and maybe something like that could sort of lead the way in terms of U.S. adoption to show that the fuel cells can work in big numbers. I mean, the other possibility, the EV advocates are going to say, if there was a big breakthrough in battery technology,
yeah,
which they've always claimed is around the corner, and you had much longer ranges in these and fast charging, which, you know, is coming, you know, much shorter charges. I mean, Nissan has a charger that says you can recharge 80% of your Leaf in just 10 minutes. So if the range and the durability of the batteries gets significantly better, then I do think, and the cost comes down, then I do think EVs could succeed in the short to medium term. But that, again, there's a lot of ifs there.
And we see these battery suppliers either barely staying afloat or going bankrupt. So it doesn't seem there's a lot of vibrancy in that. And I want to go back. Sean, you flinched when David said China, about China, Amanda. You just kind of, your thoughts on that.
Well, actually, China is a place for electric cars. They're finding some consumer resistance. You can get a license plate in Shanghai or Beijing only if you're buying an electric car. At this point, that's how bad the environmental problem is in those cities, with their rapid ramp up in the use of automotive products, at least with 25 million people.
Yeah,
they really don't have much choice. You know, one of the reasons we were supposed to invest in companies like A123, mm-hmm, with both federal and state of Michigan money, was to stay ahead of the Chinese. And of course, we know the story now. They're being sold to the Chinese. With some technical restrictions, but this is enormous irony, even worse than Solyndra. Nobody sold Solyndra to the Chinese, and the Chinese beat them. But now we're even selling these battery plants, these empty battery plants where there's no demand. I mean, there's other solutions. Compressed natural gas is getting another look.
And we're finding more natural gas reserves.
Oh, enormously so. And there's new innovations coming on keeping it on board the vehicle. And it's cheaper. It's a cheaper infrastructure problem than electric. And you know what's really going to clobber the hybrids this year? Will be these better internal combustion engines, the revenge of the internal combustion engine, these small four-cylinder motors, and better technologies and transmissions and other technologies in the vehicle and lightweighting that won't give you an economic reason for a very long while for the vast majority of Americans to buy an electric. It's that competition, which I think David knows about, that's most surprising of all.
But I would say this about hybrids and EVs, is that there is a small number of people. And remember, the car you drive is one of the ways you say things about yourself. And that's why companies spend so much money branding these vehicles. And there's a small number of people who are environmentally motivated, who wanted to buy the Toyota Prius because they wanted to send a message that I'm green. And that's one of the reasons that Prius has been pretty much the only successful hybrid that's been sold in the United States. You know, initially you saw that effort with the Leaf and, you know, ads with polar bears and a polar bear hugging a Leaf owner and thanking them for helping to reduce global warming. And there is a small market. you know, again, there's a very sort of loyal, you know, group. The problem is everybody, the media, the auto companies, everybody thought, you know, or most people thought it would, there would be a larger market by this point. I mean, nobody thought that everybody would disappoint, and everybody has disappointed, from GM, you know, Nissan, Ford, Tesla, Fisker, these two startups, and, you know, who have gotten hundreds of millions of dollars in government money to build EVs and plug-ins. So it is hard to not be pessimistic about the future, but it also took Toyota 10 years to sell a million hybrids in the U.S., and it was a very slow ramp-up, and then many people dismissed it. So it's still possible that EVs could surprise people. Sean, don't you think, one thing I've always thought is the basic technology, what are we driving around today, is basically the same internal combustion engine with some improvements that we were driving 100 years ago. But again, unless there's a value added, unless there's a way that people can see a big benefit, either through gas prices or environmental reasons or something to convince them, or tax policy, or, you know, free travel and HOV lanes like California is doing to boost sales, the internal combustion engine has had a pretty good run, and everybody agrees, at least for the next 40 years, it's going to have a very large share of the market.
Sean, you get the last word.
I would say, yes, we still have four wheels and a motor in the front generally, and it runs on fossil fuel. But there have been a lot of other improvements, and I'm very optimistic about what this industry can do in regards to fuel economy over the next 10 years. And electrics will always have a niche. They're not going to go away. I mean, they've developed enough in the last 3 years that all those nice environmentally conscious people in the 50 campus towns in San Francisco and in L.A. and Boston and New York will have their choice, okay? But it's just not going to be the choice of the other 97%.
David Shepherdson is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Detroit News, and he's joined us from Washington. And then here in the studio, Dr. Sean McElinden, Executive VP of Research and Chief Economist at the Center for Auto Research. Thanks for a great conversation to both of you.
Thanks. Appreciated it.
And, of course, we love hearing from you here at Stateside. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show or stories you think we should cover, people you think we should profile. You can find us online at michiganradio.org. Go to the Stateside link. On Facebook, just search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty. And, of course, on Twitter at Stateside Radio. Our show today was produced and directed by Mercedes Mejia. Our executive producer is Zoe Clark. The program engineer today by Peg Watson. Our contributors are Ellie Billings, Emily Fox, Maya Friedman, and Austin Davis. This program is a production of Michigan Radio, a broadcasting service of the University of Michigan. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you so much for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow afternoon at 3:00.